Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
It's a great day for a podcast. Once again, here he is, John Oakley.
We have a lot in common with the states. You know, when it comes to illegal immigration and bogus refugee claimants, I was listening to a story earlier today where a man in Ohio had claimed refugee status and granted. Turns out now he was complicit in the Rwandan genocide of 94. So, you know, we might have some similar folks in our own midst and not know about it. There was a story that there were more than 28,000 failed refugee claimants in this country awaiting deportation. Let's find out why it's 28,000 and counting and what it's taking us to deport people. Joining us on the line is Richard Kurland, an immigration lawyer and member of the group Lawyers for Secure Immigration, joining us today from the West Coast. Richard, I appreciate you joining us here in Toronto. Good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon.
28,000 plus failed refugee claimants awaiting deportation. Is that a number that should concern us?
Well, it depends how much risk you're willing to tolerate. Not every one of those 28,000 plus cases present the same risk. The ones that we're concerned about, frankly, are the terrorist-related ones, the serious criminality ones, the war crimes and crimes against humanity ones. Those are the ones that stick. And for some reason, Canada has a really hard time getting rid of these people under our law.
And why is that? I mean, I cited the case in Ohio of the guy who's now complicit or accused of being complicit in the Rwandan genocide. I have to assume maybe we've got some of those in our midst, no?
Absolutely. And, you know, that's rearview mirror stuff. I mean, look through that front window, the Gaza program. The source territory is a known, a designated terrorist organization who's in control. And they're masters at embedding themselves into civilian populations. And there are some groups in Canada, supported by NDP federally, at least according to NDP documents and motions, that they want to allow people from Gaza to come in with no security and background checks. Get on the flight, and we'll figure out who's who after you arrive in Canada. Well, this number of failed removals when it comes to refugee claimants, and once you hit Canadian soil, you're free to push that refugee claimant button. That's the law, and that should be allowed. But you can't get rid of them. You can't get rid of them. So in our immigration history in court, it takes literally decades, if you can do it at all, to remove someone.
Yeah, I was going to ask, typically, how long does it take to process a claim?
Well, there you go. I mean, in some years, Canada is able to process a refugee claim from beginning to end in 18 months, certainly under 2 years. But then, you know, the bean counters walk in and they try to save pennies and end up spending pounds. 3-4 years is no longer unusual. So what does it mean? You get here, as soon as your paperwork is processed and you're now a refugee claimant, you get a work permit, you get Medicare, kids go to school, and we'll get around to determining whether yes or no you're a refugee, see you in about 3-4 years. But our operational history is the world's not stupid, the word gets out. All you have to do is access Canada, and that buys you 3-4 years here. And then there are other means and methods to stay. So what happens is the problem grows and gets worse. And that's not appropriate policy. Instead, front-end those refugee claims to give people faster hearings, not longer hearings.
Well, is it a matter of a lack of resources, political will? What is it?
one and the same. Politics is the art of the allocation of scarce resources, some people say. And so, especially now, given our minority government and who's controlling whom, you do not want to appear to be anti-refugee or anti-immigrant. Not now. Not with so many marginal swing constituencies in 905, 416, and 604 in play. So better to turn a blind eye and let the next team handle this problem. Meanwhile, that decision's going to make the problem grow ever bigger.
Richard Kurland's with us, an immigration lawyer, member of the group Lawyers for Secure Immigration. The report out that more than 28,000 failed refugee claimants are awaiting deportation. So they've already been processed and assessed as not having the satisfactory criteria to remain in this country as a refugee. But we can't put them on a plane. In large measure, Richard, would you say, because we can't even find them. They've gone to ground. They're off the grid or the radar.
Well, there's another kettle of fish, because Canada does not have exit controls. So Canada can say, well, we're not sure if they're here. We're not sure if they self-executed the deportation order. We don't know. And that 28,000 figure is the active inventory. After a number of years, to prevent embarrassment, a case that has not moved or is unknown is taken out of the active inventory and placed into the inactive inventory. And that is the mammoth cave. In fairness, we do have the capability as a country of identifying a human being based on information sharing agreements with other like-minded countries and biometrics and other fancy toys. So if we really wanted, we don't have to rely on paper. We don't have to rely on all sorts of things like that. We can plug into our security systems, intelligence systems, and locate a human. We have that capability. So do we want to use it? And again, boils down to a political question. When does it come to light? When you have those horrific stories of, for example, the Gale case in Toronto years ago, where a person who was not deported because of CBSA found themselves in a killing of a police officer.
Right.
And that's the risk. That's the real risk. So I'm not so concerned if someone was shoplifting. Okay, fine, it's bad. But I am concerned if it's a terrorist-related thing or a murderer or, you know, people who are supporting the work of terrorist groups domestically and outside Canada. Those are the people we should prioritize for immediate removal process.
Well, for sure. Fifth columnists and subversives and people who would do ill to our society. And there's no doubt that they're here, given that 28,000 failed claimants. You've got to assume just a matter of percentages and probability that they lurk amongst us, and yet we're not getting rid of them. In the case of Clinton Gale, he came back several times after having deportation orders, but he kept coming back. I mean, is there no screening to say, hey, dude, we kicked you out of the country one time. What are you doing again? I mean, how come we don't have fail-safes as far as that's concerned?
Well, those protections were put in place when Mr. Harper came into power. So we don't see those repeat turnstile people that often, because the policy and practices pogey time. It's direct nonstop detention. So that's okay. But we have to be vigilant. I mean, there are people who would love to get into Canada. We can bring in the good people. And flipping back to the Gazan program, which the minister said is a failure, maybe it'll be canceled soon. It's possible, if Ottawa wants to open up that wallet, to fly in to the border area in Gaza, our security intel people, to conduct face-to-face interviews and get the job done so as to unite families in Canada who present zero risk.
Well, they've made 1,000 places available, but so far the uptake has only been a few dozen, hasn't it?
Well, it's even higher. Applications. Each family has six or seven people because of all the kids per family. And no one, zero, have made it to Canadian soil. A handful have been approved, their applications. But
well, how come they're not getting here, though, Richard? How come they're not getting here?
Well, they have to get out of the territory which requires the consent of Egypt and Israel.
Right.
And given Canada just slammed Israel in Parliament based on an NDP vote with the Liberals, Israel's not going to facilitate the reunion of Canadians, at least not politically.
So we're stuck then in this ongoing unresolved situation where we've got more and more refugee claimants that are failed, but we're not taking care of this file in any meaningful way. It's 28,000 plus today. Maybe it's even larger, but it's not going to get winnowed down to a reasonable number, if we can use reasonable in quotations. And so, 'twas ever thus and will continue to be thus. That's really...
And that's the closing comment, exactly, because these government departments have silo mentalities. It's not my budget you're going to use.
Right.
And until someone takes the top off the ant farm and looks down holistically to say, no, we are going to resource you, Immigration Refugee Board, to do your job faster in greater volumes, then the cascade of savings will flow across all government departments, healthcare, education, you name it. Less expenditure because you've upfronted at the IRB instead of shutting your eyes to the problem.
Well, Richard, thanks for putting it into some kind of perspective for us. I appreciate your time on the West Coast this afternoon.
A pleasure. Have fun with the snow.
You got Richard Kurland, immigration lawyer, member of the group Lawyers for Secure Immigration.
Listen to The John Oakley Show live each weekday afternoon from 3 until 6. If you live in the Toronto area, just turn that AM dial to 640 and listen anywhere on earth 24 hours a day by going to 640toronto.com. Follow on Twitter at @AM640Oakley. You've been listening to A Curious Cast. New podcasts and shows are debuting all the time. So check back often to see what's new in the Curious Cast library.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.